the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. And with me is co-host Seth Cox from AvengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We're episode 466, and would you believe it, after a week after we speculated, when will the Cardinals actually win a game? They go and do it the next week. Continuing the progress, they should have won week one. They should have won week two, though they choked away week two. And then they got out to a big lead against Dallas and did it. And what was an incredibly wacky weekend of football, right? There were so many big favorites, should have been blowout wins by good teams over bad teams. And then the Colts, the Texans, and the Cardinals go and win outright. That Sunday didn't make sense to me at all.
No, but you have to look at it and wonder if maybe Jacksonville's a bad team. They have not. It took, we talked about the Cardinals offense last year and how slow they started. And you look at Jacksonville, they went six quarters without scoring a touchdown. Like, that's not an expected thing when you spend all that money and investments in the quarterbacks and receivers. And, it's interesting because of the three, you'd have to say the Cardinals win was the most unexpected and impressive of the weekend. Like, Dallas was looking utterly invincible coming into this game, and yeah, they're missing a lot of up front, and they're injured and injury depleted, but much to the chagrin of the broadcast, so are the Cardinals, where they were, Jonathan Ledbetter's really the only starting interior defensive lineman they still have. They're obviously without their best defensive player in Buda Baker, and it was kind of fine. I mean, we'll get into it, but they were able to stand up when it mattered, and that was on the goal line. That was, keeping the Cowboys out of the end zone. And, as simple as it sounds, if you just hold teams to field goals or failed fourth down conversions, it's a lot easier to win games than trying to keep pace in the scoring aspect of things. And that's what the Cardinals did, and, they did it well, and now they're 1-2, and we don't have to speculate when they win their first game anymore, right?
Right. And they picked up a win. So, in our projection of how things are going to go, they're already on track, because we both had them 1-2 at this point. Neither one of us said that we both said that the Cowboys game was a no-chance game, and they took no chance and turned it into something. So let's talk about, how in the world they beat the Cowboys. We'll talk about Josh Dobbs. Where we are with him and our thoughts of him on the team moving forward, and then kind of bounce around the question if we think the Cardinals are a bad good team or a good bad team. Let's start with how they beat the Cowboys. There was really no reason for them to beat the Cowboys if we look at kind of the stats across the board, because first of all, the Cowboys outgained them 416 yards to 400. They have more first downs, 26 to 20. They are better on third down, 9 for 16. They rushed for 185 yards. Now, the Cardinals outdid that with the rushing yards. They outpassed them. They did have more penalties. They did have the one turnover. But they also dominated time of possession at 34 minutes to the Cardinals' 25. And yet, the Cardinals won the game and never trailed. And it came down to basically, obviously, the one thing for me, the big play came down to Kaiser White's interception at the end. But the fact that that the Cardinals held them to one touchdown in five red zone trips, all in the second half, and held them out of the end zone on two goal to goal situations, and the drive it's kind of the opposite, because the Giants last week went 4 for 5 in the red zone, scoring three touchdowns. What happened to them in the second half against the Giants, they learned from and didn't do it. They didn't. In fact, like if we look at the second half, the Cowboys had four second half possessions. All four of them got inside the 10.
Yeah,
they only allowed 6 points.
Right, and we talked a little bit about it before the show, you and I, and we will, as fans, take a win anyway it comes, a little bit surprising, but I think you and I were both kind of mystified just by what the Cowboys were doing or not doing. Like, I talked about it with you, I wrote about it. The Cowboys, after the Cardinals scored in a great fourth quarter touchdown drive, it was very few plays, right? 1, 2, 3, 4 plays. They scored a touchdown in 4 plays. Coming off that huge pass to Michael Wilson from Josh Dobbs. Ironically enough, then they run the ball up the middle for no gain, right? And that kind of you go, oh no, are they going to have to settle for a field goal and only be up 8 points, you know? But they scored, right? 7:22 left in the game. The Cowboys decided that, well, 7:22 left in the game, we just need to run the clock off, get a touchdown, get an onside kick, get another touchdown, and walk out of Arizona with a win, right? Because, I guess they could have gone. No, there was no way because they were down 28-16. So, they had to get two touchdowns, and they were just so nonchalant about it.
Honestly, it's like McCarthy completely overlooked the Cardinals and said, yeah, we got this.
Well, and it was almost like they were up 28-16. I mean, they got the ball with 7:22 left, and Dak threw that interception with 3:05 left. They ran 4 minutes of offense off the clock. Or 4 minutes of time on offense off the clock. That was literally just handing, even if they scored a touchdown, they're still, they're down 28-23. They still have to get an onside kick or kick deep and get a stop because they had 3 timeouts. So they could have done either or. And it just I don't know, man. It was kind of crazy to me that's how they went, because you look at it, and on that drive, the last time they had the football, down 12, they just straight up acted like they had no hurry in the world. Like, it was no big deal. They could take their time. It was for them. I'm looking at it right now. They ran 13 plays. I mean, we're talking about a team down 2 scores. And 8 of those were runs. They ran the ball 8 times.
It's keeping with the game plan they've had all year. And maybe it's just simply this, is that Mike McCarthy is looking ahead to their bigger games and isn't willing to sacrifice some surprise, that they are dedicated to running the football. But it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. But
it doesn't. And the thing is, I get where you're saying, I get where you're coming from, but this is a game in the scheme of things that you couldn't afford to lose, because you look at what Philadelphia is doing this year and kind of just meat grinding out wins. I mean, I know they only won by 5 and then only won by 6. And then last night, we're recording Tuesday, they beat Tampa by 14. But you look at their schedule, the Rams, what looked like something early hasn't really come to fruition. The Jets are awful now, just due to injury. And so, yeah, Dallas plays them twice, but are you willing to put in your hands that you have to beat Philly twice to retake the, all of a sudden you're down in the division? I mean, that, and not just that, but you look at the playoffs, and I know it's week three, but you don't want to be the team that's sitting at the, what is it now, the eighth spot, which is I think what they're at in the playoff contention, on the outside looking in, because you lost to the Arizona Cardinals in week three. Like that is 100% the type of loss that comes back in at the end of the season, right? And you go, God, if we just would have taken Arizona more seriously, like maybe we would have won. And I talked about it the week before when we talked about New York, right? Like, and obviously they won, but I was really surprised that they held Andrew Thomas out. Now, obviously it's more serious because he didn't even play against the 49ers, but like these are games you have to have if you're considering yourself a good team or competing, you know, in the NFC East, which is looks like, you know, a great division, or you know, if you're Seattle or Tampa or New Orleans or one of those teams that is going to be in a fight like within your division, you can't afford a loss to the Arizona Cardinals, who by all intents and purposes look like a team that should be picking in the top 10. And just a game plan and come out that way and then in the game that way. I mean, you and I joked about it. I said, you know, hammer Tony Pollard's over 71.5. Oh, he cleared that. He cleared that real easy. But at what cost? I mean, did he really need 40 be to feel like they needed more from everybody else? But instead, it was, you know, it was, hey, Tony Pollard. And like, I genuinely don't understand what their game plan was and why they looked at, like, hey, let's keep her on the ball. Like I said, when they were down 21-13 on that initial drive in the fourth quarter, okay, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But when they kicked a field goal and it just cut it to 21-16, like something needed to click in McCarthy's brain of like, hey, we got to go now. Like this isn't just a run the ball type of thing. And especially when the Cardinals went down and scored a touchdown to make it a 12-point game. And we're sitting here going, all right, they can't blow 12 points in 7 minutes, right? Like that's too much for even this iteration of the Cardinals.
Well, hey, it's interesting, and I understand that the Cowboys were down some players. So defensively, they lost Trayvon Diggs. That's tremendous. And then they were down. They ended up being down Zach Martin and Tyler Biadasz. Tyron Smith wasn't 100%. And who knows? Maybe. And they definitely ran the ball well enough. So did they not trust
the offensive line?
Did they not trust the offensive line to protect Dak? Do they not trust Dak in that situation to throw the ball when that's what Dak has done through his career? Because they've got the playmakers for sure.
Well, and let's just be honest. If you don't trust your team in that or your quarterback in that position, then you're not a Super Bowl contending team.
Right.
Like that's just the reality of it.
So what do you think? Do you think that the Cardinals more won that game or that the Cowboys more lost it? That it was more about what the Cardinals did than what the Cowboys didn't do?
No, I thought it was about what the Cardinals did. I mean, you can only – and let's be honest, you know, you can only compete against what the other team's doing. And if they're willing to run down the clock as much as the Cowboys did, which again was just inexcusable, and then that's on them. But let's be honest, I mean, 62.5% completion percentage from Dak Prescott, that's not good anymore. It's just not. Like if you're completing less than 65% of your passes in the NFL today with how the game is played with the short throws and things like that, it's just not a good process. Your process is bad. And that's what we saw from Dak. I mean, you have a guy that was, I mean, 40 attempts for 249 yards. He had 60 more yards on 20 more attempts than Josh Dobbs. Nobody is going to look at the Cardinals receivers and go, you know, go, hey, I'd take Marquise Brown and
Michael Wilson and Rondale Moore
over CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, Brandon Cooks, and you know, and so that's just kind of what it is. Like We talked about it. Like our two positions the last 2 weeks that we felt, and Darren Waller is 100% the better tight end, but you know, we weren't sure what his health status was and things of that nature. The two positions were running back and tight end. And we, if you would have told me that Tony Pollard would outgain James Conner in this game, you and I both would have gone, oh, the Cardinals lost by two touchdowns,
yeah,
three. Like, Tony Pollard ran for 122 yards and Rico Dowdell came in and had a good game. Like, we would have been like, oh yeah, the Cowboys won that game. Like, it is what it is. Like, we're not surprised by any means. And instead it was the opposite. It was like, holy cow, they came back, they held on, they won, they controlled the game. And you know, that's just the reality of it. Like, when you have an efficient attack and you've got, I don't want to say never, because never is a strong word, but you're never going to see a team that has three guys over 50 yards rushing. Like, that's just not something that happens. Well, very often.
That was the thing, is that they got such big plays. That one thing that they were this methodically blah against Washington, they showed some explosiveness. I mean, you had the six, like, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 plays that went for 20 yards or more. That was with this iteration of the Cardinals offense, with Joshua Dobbs at quarterback. You had the 69-yard pass to Michael Wilson. You had the 45-yard run from Rondale Moore. My goodness, he looked fast on that. Dobbs, 44-yard run. You have the...
And he looked slow on that.
Right. You know, like, we're going to talk about Joshua Dobbs in a bit, but I am impressed. He's even... To me, he's even better than what Brett Hundley. And I think Brett Hundley probably would have been a good comp, but he's doing even more than Brett Hundley. But I'm going to talk about it. But the Cardinals were doing explosive things offensively, they did great in the red zone. And I don't know if the Cardinals can sustain that sort and expect to hold teams to one touchdown and five red zone attempts. You don't want to do that.
No, you don't want to take those chances.
But maybe that's the best we can expect with this unit the way it is. Especially, I mean, that defensive front. It's a bunch of guys you've really never heard of. Now, they bring up Ray Lopez. And while he started a bunch of games in the league, I'll tell you this, I didn't know anything about Ray Lopez before last weekend.
No, and that's just, I mean, again, it's, you know, I talked about it last week, and it just, the reality of the lack of talent came up. But like I said, I think it's one thing when that talent's, and I don't want to say they weren't prepared. That's, you know, that makes it sound bad. But the reality was, you know, you don't plan on having to play your last defensive lineman, right? Like that guy's kind of a break glass in case of emergency person. And that's where they got to last week. And you know, it's just, it's one of those situations now that, you know, and Rallis talked about it today, that they're preparing for every situation now. They realize, like, oh, you know, we talked about it. The tank isn't about, like, them not bringing in talent. LJ Collier was a good player. Carlos Watkins was a good player. It was the fact that those are probably NFL backups or rotational guys. And then, so then the reality was behind them were fringe roster guys at best. And now those are your starters. And that's kind of where the tank was. But I've just been blown away by the preparation of these guys, especially along the defensive line. Cause like you said, I mean, they got great play from Chris Barnes. Who knows if he'll be healthy this week. You know, we saw Ezekiel Turner. They've gotten just outstanding play from guys that realistically, and I don't mean this to sound negative, but probably just shouldn't even be in the NFL. I mean, like, and so to get play from guys like a Ben Stilley, like, I'm just looking at the, you know, the amount of snaps these guys played, you know. So
Ledbetter played 50. Then after that, it was fairly evening. Fotu and Strong around 35, 36. And then you had Stilley and
Stills
that played more in the high 20s.
Stills got to 33 and Stilley got to 27. That's what I'm saying. Like, we both really like Dante Stills. We're excited about his ability or an opportunity that he may have, but that's, you know, later this year, next year, and now he's forced into play, and you're just like, you're like, this is not a dude that should be playing that much. Just flat out shouldn't be playing that much. And again, you have two more sacks from this ragtag bunch of guys. Yeah, one of them was Zaven Collins basically being unblocked on a naked boot that didn't come to fruition.
Victor DeMakeji, 2.5 sacks through 3 weeks.
Yep, and you know, DeMakeji's playing well. I think Cameron Thomas is playing really well.
He made impact plays in the red zone, like on two consecutive plays. And then they had to finish that game without Zaven too.
Right. And that's what makes me laugh, you know, is Cowboys fans have spent all week lamenting the missed calls. And I'm like, one of the Cardinals' top players on defense, Zaven Collins, literally had to leave the game for an uncalled hands to the face where he got poked in the eye. Like missed calls happen, man. That's just part of the game. It's part of all of this. And I don't know. It's crazy to me that this is where we're at, because you and I have talked about it. Like, the realistic expectation for this team is low. And to see them play this well through, you know, these games is just,
it's encouraging. It's really encouraging.
It's really encouraging. And it tells you that through all the minutiae of the offseason, where you and I mean, this will be one thing you and I can pat ourselves on the back for. We never fell into the, like, oh, Jonathan Gannon and his rah-rahness, you know, or whatever, and like all this and that and the others. It was like, no, he's a good coach, man. Like, he's just, you know, he's a different cat, and he's a guy that, you know, does things a little differently, and we'll see if it works. And through three games, it's working, and it's because he's trusting what has to be, early in the process, the best coaching staff the Cardinals have probably had since 2015.
It does feel that way. It feels that way because of just how I'm going to describe. They are very I hate to sound like other coaching staffs are not as intentional, but they are so detail driven. They are so intentional about everything that they do. Very, very open. And the fact that Gannon goes in the team meeting and will even bring up things from the coach's mistakes and say, hey, we did these things wrong. This is what should have happened instead. It's accountability across the board. It is, everything is done intentionally. It's every detail is thought through, rather than just go be professionals. Don't go be professionals and do all this stuff. Then you have expectations about this, about this, and about this. I love it. I really like it. And the fact that they've, you know, the two preseason ones were something, but to pick up a win early in the process against a good team, a perceived good team, it just adds, it's money in the bank for when things get tough, because they played competitively the first. It's easy to be competitive at the beginning of the season. Even when you're not good, it's easy to compete. It's easy to buy in early. It's going to be tough later in the season, but you know that money in the bank that you get from a win that you had over Dallas, or if you can knock off another team in the next few weeks, and then when Kyler gets back, that money in the bank goes a long way in terms of that trust factor that they have that this process is good.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, you know, like you said, they're not necessarily, like, the win this weekend didn't make any sense. Like, and I just wanted to say a couple stats. Michael Wilson and Marquise Brown outgained Michael Gallup and CeeDee Lamb. It's 5 yards. That's it. Nothing big, but 5 more yards than Gallup and CeeDee Lamb. But then the next two guys on the list, Jake Ferguson and Rico Dowdell, combined for an additional 73 yards. James Conner and Rondell Moore combined for 22 more yards. James Conner, Rondell Moore, Keontae Ingram, and Zach Ertz and Trey McBride combined for 39 more yards. So like
Zach Ertz and the 31 and a half, though, that was a bad bit. I took a bath on my props last week. That was bad.
It was, I mean, but it was one of those things we expected them to, that's what I said. If we had this conversation, we said Jake Ferguson, Hunter Luepke and Peyton Hendershot outgained Zach Ertz and Trey McBride by almost nine times, we would have been like, oh, how much did the Cardinals lose by? And then you went in and said, oh, on top of that, Tony Pollard had 122 yards rushing. We would have been like, oh man, this was a bad game for the Cardinals. Like they lost by two or three touchdowns, because you never expect to win a game where you have the advantage at running back and tight end. And Connor played great, don't get me wrong, but they get outproduced that significantly and you win a game. And so that just tells you, like, this team, for all its warts, for all its problems, to see Michael Wilson and Marquise Brown outgain Michael Gallup and CeeDee Lamb, like, that just goes to show, like, they're not completely devoid of talent, but they're less talented, but I would say much better coached than a lot of teams right now.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Here at Podcast, Best Serve Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's move and talk about the status of Joshua Dobbs and how he's playing. That's coming up next to Rise Up Here. We're back on the Rise Up Here at Podcast, Best Serve Cardinals Talk on the Web. Josh Dobbs is a guy that, and if you've been listening to this show for the last few weeks, both of us questioned the move. I have to say that, but the coaches knew something more than we did in this case. Dobbs in this offense has been not good, but has been very steady and has improved each week. And I wrote about it. I think we can look at kind of what is happening is that he has just, over the first 3 weeks of the season, Drew Stanton / Colt McCoyed himself into this coaching staff. Drew Stanton, you know, he was brought over in 2013 when Bruce, it was the first move that they made. But where he actually made his career was those starts in 2014 when he filled in for Carson Palmer and they were steady and they won a few games. And guess what? Drew Stanton was the backup there until forever. Like, and he even followed... Bruce Arians elsewhere later on. But his career was made by a handful of starts in 2014 where he established himself. Colt McCoy did the same thing, three starts in 2021, and he earned himself the status of, you know, he's Cliff Kingsbury's guy. And they went out and got Dobbs to our chagrin, and he's made plays. I didn't think that he had, like, I think he's played better than I could imagine that he's played. But, I mean, basically, I feel he's hit his ceiling each of the last 2 weeks. I don't think you can get much better from him, but I think he's now put himself in a position to guess what? He will be the Cardinals' backup as long as he doesn't think he can start somewhere else, which he shouldn't think he should do that.
No, but you look at what he's done, and, you know, somebody said it the other day, and it was... ironic, funny, I don't know what you want to call it. but somebody said the other day, you know, if you're the Tennessee Titans, wouldn't you probably rather have Josh Dobbs than Ryan Tannehill at this point? Like, and it's just, you know, we didn't expect a whole lot. This is a guy that had never won a game in his career. I mean, that's a baffling statistic. And I know there's a lot of people that argue that quarterback wins are not a thing, but they are to an extent. I mean, this is a guy that's played in, before this season, he had played in eight NFL games. He had started two. you know, his two starts with Tennessee, less than 60% completions, two touchdowns, two interceptions. He wasn't very good. And this year, whether it's Petzing, whether it's the talent around him, whether it's just a guy that at 28 is kind of having a similar, not completely same kind of resurgence as like what Geno Smith had, getting into the right system, it's been fine. And the reason I say fine is, I mean, completion percentage looks great, 72%, but he has 549 yards and two touchdowns in three games. So he's averaging, you know, a lot less than 200 yards per game. I mean, he's averaging 183 yards per game. He's been sacked five times in three games, which I think is good. I mean, that's good for him.
He hasn't thrown an interception. He only turned the ball over the two times in the second half against Washington, and he kind of cleared that up. He's playing just above game manager level. It's kind of like it's 2021 Colt McCoy. He's playing just below that.
Yeah, but, and that's all you ask for from a backup, right?
Exactly. Now, to the people who are going out the crazy, like the get, like stop. No, Dobbs is like, you think you like what Dobbs is doing in this offense? Wait till Kyler Murray is healthy, because Kyler Murray can make plays. Dobbs has made more plays than I thought he could. So he's surprised me. But you are not, like, this team with Dobbs wins four games, maybe.
Yeah, probably just four. And so you look at it, this is, you know, he's played above our expectations. But he's also put himself in a position to be successful by not turning the ball over, not taking unnecessary chances. And then, you know, outside of the Michael Wilson play last week, he's also had they haven't really had to ask him to make plays in big situations.
Right. And I think I will give him this. That Michael Wilson play was one that was well designed. Two, dude was wide open.
Yeah, it was a complete. I was talking to a Dallas guy, and
how,
he said, you know,
how does a guy end up wide out that wide open completely down the field is baffling.
Well, it was just a coverage breakdown. Somebody, the corner on Wilson ran a zone coverage. The corner that was on, and I assume it was Marquise Brown, but I don't know who was over there. But the corner on the other side of the field was playing man and chased Marquise Brown across the field. And so it just opened the entire half of the field. And so, yeah, you look at it, I mean, that was 100% one of those situations where this team, you know, drew up a great play and it worked, and it ended up, you know, going for a big play in a big situation. You know, the other thing is, I think that you have a guy that understands that. I think for the first time, there's really not a lot of pressure on him. You know, last year he was brought in a bad situation to basically save Tennessee's season, right? Like he basically had to win them one game or else they weren't going to make the playoffs. And like it or not, that's just an unfair situation for any player, but especially a guy that's never had success in the league. Like, you know, if you want to say like a guy when like Kyler Murray, right? Like as a rookie and he's in that situation, be like, well, this is what we drafted you for, kid, right? But Josh Dobbs was a, what, fifth-round pick, you know?
And had basically...
fourth-round pick.
And, he was a late fourth-round pick and had been a third-stringer basically his entire career.
And so, you know, they basically gave him the same responsibility that the Cardinals are. Like, hey, don't screw it up. And he didn't really screw it up. It was just that he wasn't good enough to make plays. And that's something we said. Like, you know... The biggest thing for the Cardinals has been they haven't asked him to make a lot of plays. And when they did, they lost two games, right? Like it's not an ironic thing that when he's needed to make plays, they've lost games, because that's just not what he does well, you know, and especially that first game when you're like, oh, this is the Josh Dobbs experience, right? Like, he's gonna crap the bed. He's gonna come up a little short, and it is what it is. And you can't, you know, I know people like to get mad at the player, but it's like, no, the player didn't put himself in that position. That, you know, general manager or you know, an organization, you should realize that that's the limitation of Josh Dobbs. And so if you're okay understanding that in situations when you need him to pull out a win, like they did in week one and unfortunately week two, it's not going to happen, then that's fine. But you can't get upset when he doesn't, right? Like, you can't be like, oh, I don't understand why he couldn't make these plays. Well, there's a reason he's on his fourth team and he's started two games before this year. Like, it's, and like, if a guy is good, if a guy is an NFL quality starter, trust me, he'll get a ton of chances in the NFL. We've seen it, you know, Geno Smith, Blaine Gabbert, like all these guys have had a ton of chances.
Simeon, come on.
Yeah. a ton of chances to start in the NFL. Dobbs hasn't. And that's because most teams look at it and go, they realize, they're like, okay, he's fine as a backup, but he's not the guy you want running the show. And that's fine, because like you said, he's basically put himself in a position. I mean, and Drew Stanton was the same way, right? After Stanton flopped in Detroit, he never got another shot to start in the NFL. I mean, he went to Indy, he was the backup. He went to Arizona, he was the backup. Like,
no, though there was he was going to be the starter for about a week.
Right.
Until he traded for Carson Palmer.
But you, I think you nailed it with that. Like, that's okay role to be. Like, it's okay to be the, like, hey, if anything happens to Kyler Murray, you're our guy and we're okay with that.
Well, especially when you find yourself in a situation where your coach absolutely trusts you, because Drew Stanton had the absolute trust of Bruce Arians, and he talked about it. Like, and after Colt, after his stint in 2021, he was cemented as the, we completely trust you. But with the, you know, the new coaching staff and his arm strength proved otherwise. But this is Drew Petzing / Jonathan Gannon's guy. Now, I don't see, like, if he gets greedy, because nothing about his play suggests he should have a starting job somewhere. But being the trusted backup to Kyler Murray, I think it's a pretty dang good gig. And we could see him for, you know, at 28 years old, we could see him for another 4 or 5 years.
Right. And I know people would be like, what about Clayton Tune? It's like, well, you take
chances. What about Clayton Tune?
you take chances on fifth round picks and see if they work out. I mean, if Clayton Tune's the biggest miss in this class, and, you know, you get a starting corner in Keytrell Clark, and you get a rotational defensive lineman in Dante Stills, and you know, Tune's the one guy that you're like, oh, he didn't work out. And you're like, oh, that's a great draft class, right?
It is, it is. Coming up next on the Rise Up Here at Podcast, this is our Cardinals Talk on the Web. We're going to talk about the question, what type of team are the Cardinals now? Are they a good, bad team? Are they a bad, good team? That's coming up next on Rise Up Here. We're back on the Rise Up Here at Podcast, this is our Cardinals Talk on the Web. The Arizona Cardinals were expected to be a terrible team this year. I didn't expect them to be terrible. Seth didn't expect them to be terrible. Lots of people expected them to be terrible, terrible, terrible. Through three games, they have been anything but terrible. And with Josh Dobbs at the helm, they're 1-2. They should be 3-0. The fact of the matter is they should be 3-0. They would be a fluky 3-0. They would be a fraudulent 3-0. But they could and should be 3-0. Although they are 1-2. So the question is, Seth, if you're looking at the team right now, how they beat Dallas, the way they, like, then they collapsed against New York. There's no way to avoid that. But would you call this team a good, bad team or a bad, good team?
I think they're a good, bad team. I think you look at it just from a talent perspective, in that they, you know, like I said, they lack the high-end talent. So if a good team, like, you know, they'll play this week in San Francisco, is on their game, they're going to beat a team like the Arizona Cardinals. Like, even with great scheme and things, like, the talent will eventually overwhelm them. I think that they're a much better coach team than we expected or even had hoped for. And like you said, like they're so meaningful and purposeful with their coaching that it's really surprising to see how well they're playing because they do lack that talent. So for those reasons, I think that they're a good bad team, and that's a frisky team that can win. You know, like I said, like we said 5 to 6 wins all along, but that's a team that, you know, you could see win those 5 to 7 games. And by the way, if they won 4 games, we wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, this is shocking. We'd be like, oh, okay. Like that, the talent just got overwhelmed them.
And we've seen you can have terrible, terrible teams win 3 games. Look at 2018. They won 3 games. They were horrifically bad.
Right, exactly.
But it's interesting because, like, this version of the team right now, they're not a terrible team. And I think the only way you can describe them is a good, bad team. So of all the bad teams that exist in the league right now, there are a few that look bad. You feel like they are in a better spot than most. They're competing in every game. They had halftime leads in all 3, and that just haven't been able to finish until this last week. And that's, you know, they're a bad team because they can't finish, but compared to the other teams, they're in a better spot. Now, how close are they for me to being a bad, good team? Replace Joshua Dobbs and put Kyler Murray in their place. I think they move up a notch because then you've taken the talent level up a notch.
I think you insert expectations then,
yes,
too, right?
And so you can start, like, you can win games, but they're probably going to disappoint because they're going to play better without many better results. But I think now the hope is if they can tread water for however much longer that they're going to be without Kyler, and I'm still kind of eyeing week 6. Is, you know, I know Kyler can come off PUP next week. Will he? If he does, Gannon suggests that he might need weeks. 2 weeks is plural weeks, and I've been eyeing week 6 is kind of the week for that to happen. You get Kyler back, and he plays, you know, Dobbs level and better. This team's going to win a few games, and I think you're going to be at the – you might – reach the level of a bad good team. Like, not good enough. They're not going to be a playoff contending team, but they're going to hang around and be a problem. So they're not good. Well, I mean, they're not bad, but they're also not good. So they reach that next level. I'm not sure which is worse, being a good bad team or a bad good team, but it is moving in a direction that you wanted to do, and we hoped by the end of this season that they would be right at the door of competitiveness.
Yeah, and that's where they want to be, right? Like, they want to be right at the door of competitiveness and really competing this year so that next year you feel a little more confident in their ability and where they'll be as they continue to add talent. It's something you and I talked about before the show. It's why, unless Kyler cannot play physically anymore, like just can't play when he comes back, that moving on from him doesn't make sense because you're basically giving up free agency again. I mean, like we talked about earlier, right? They had to give up free agency in order to,
because they ate the contract. They basically ate the cap space for DeAndre.
They ate the
money for Colt McCoy. They didn't do cap savings moves like extending Hollywood like we thought they would do. And they did not make any splashes in the offseason. Like, their biggest splash in the offseason was re-signing Matt Prater and adding Kaiser White. I think that was, like, the biggest money they spent this year.
Right. So I'm looking at it. So he is literally $81 million against the cap if they cut him. $81 million.
Nope, can't do that.
So, yeah,
and Atlanta talked about this, like, people think this is going to be easy to move off of Kyler Murray. If Kyler Murray's bad, you can't trade him. Who's trading right. for a bad? They saw. I mean, we saw RG3. If he's RG3, nobody's trading for that contract. The Cardinals have to eat it. They can't. And what happens? What happens if they have Caleb Williams and Kyler Murray on the same roster?
Right.
That's one. Well, yeah.
And you look at it. So if they cut him, it takes their cap space from 67 million right now, so right around 70 probably, to 37 million. Like, I don't think people realize what that does. It also pigeonholes you in that you have to draft a quarterback. You can't go with Clayton Tune and Josh Dobbs next year. Like, and so all of a sudden you're just basically saying, like, yes, we're going to be bad again in 2024, which is fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with that if that's the only alternative. But if this team is competitive, like we're saying, you know, and this team is able to compete, and you look at next year and you say, okay, we want, you know, we're picking 8th, 9th, 10th with our pick, and then that Texans pick's picking, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to be number one. It looks like the Chicago Bears are really, really bad. But, you know, they're picking top five somewhere. And so you can either draft, you know, a guy or move down and get more picks, but all of a sudden you've got two top 10 picks that you're adding to this roster, plus $60, $70 million in cap space to add talent. Like, all of a sudden you're like, okay, this is a team that should compete for a wild card in 2024. And then in 2025, like, that's when the step is taken. And all of a sudden you're competing for the NFC West and things of that nature. And that's how you have to look at this. Whereas, like, again, if you move on outside of for the fact that he's just not good anymore, you're literally talking about the fact that this is a team that in 2024 is not going to be good again. And then you're looking at 2025 as that first kind of year back, as opposed to competing in 2025. So, like, that's the timeline you're looking at right now. And that's why, you know, whether it's, like you said, like week six, or even if they push it to week seven or eight, and they're, you know, two and five or 2-6 in that time. And when he comes back, and then they finish up, you know, 7-10, but they go 5-4 with Kyler, you're like, okay, this is exciting. Like, this is a team that is heading in the right direction. And like you said, like, they move from being a good, bad team to now they're just an average team that just lacks talent, which we've known all along, right? Like, right. that was never the question. We were never like, oh, this is a super talented team that should be competing. It was always like, oh, wow, Jonathan Ledbetter, LJ Collier, and Lekki Fotu is your starting defensive line. Like, oh, okay. Like, this is going to be a rough year. But yeah, so just it's just hopeful. I guess that's the best way to put it, right? It's hopeful that this is going to improve. And you're looking at, you know, you mentioned Hollywood. You look at a guy like Hollywood right now. Do we expect him to be this? And it's not great. Like, I don't want anybody to think I'm saying, like, oh, he's been great, but, like, did we expect him to be this productive through three games without Kyler? I mean, it's just about 50 yards a game. It's not much. Two touchdowns, again, it's not much, but it's more than we expected, right?
Well, I think the fact that we were expecting terrible nothing. Play, we were expecting that helps. Yeah, and then that's where we're at. A team that is they're bad. They're a bad team. They're an under-talented team, but they are overperforming at that. And that's kind of the perfect place. And for those who think that the Cardinals are secretly or not so secretly tanking, would a general manager rooting for losses react as crazily as Monty Austinfort did when players were coming off the field with that win?
I know, right?
like he would like. He would, if he weren't committed to winning even this year, he would have stayed up in the owner's box and just been like, well, this is ruining our plan.
Right. Well, this is not what we had in mind.
We were like, yay, a win, but dang it.
So, I mean, it's just, like I said, like the production you're getting from Connor, I think that was the most expected, but I also think it's interesting that it's been so good with how efficient he's been. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
he was so, like, 2 years ago, he was volume, but not particularly explosive. Last year, he played better, and this year, it's been even better. Healthy. He's healthy, which has been helpful, but...
And that's the thing, is he's not going to keep this pace. But, I mean, this is a guy that's on pace for 1,500 yards rushing and over 5 yards a carry. Like, that's genuinely unheard of. Like, over 5 yards a carry and to get, like, 1,200 yards is really good. But, like, when you start talking 14, like, that, those are the things that I think are the unexpected. And that's where you know, and it's something that we've kind of hinted around, but I, you know, we've never blatantly talked about, is like, it starts to beg the question, like, if they do start to produce at a high level or become a team that you look at and you go, oh, this is a good team. You know, how long are Drew Pecksing and Nick Rallis even going to be around? Right. Like, 'cause this is like that, the fact that they're getting offensive production like they are, they're, you know, averaging 5.5 yards per carry. The fact that they're not turning the ball over, the fact that they're game planning to have success with Joshua Dobbs as their quarterback, and then the fact that they're having any type of success on defense with the ragtag bunch of guys that they are having, it genuinely is been fun to watch. And you know, we'll talk about it on Thursday. It all might come crashing down on Sunday, right? But they have done enough that the goodwill will be, oh, that's not unexpected, right? You're playing the team that's looked like the best team in the NFL in the San Francisco 49ers, and or maybe the second best team behind the Miami Dolphins, right? Like, you're playing the 49ers and you get beat badly. It's like, oh, okay, that was expected. That's not surprising. But also, all of a sudden, it's like, you know, can they cover that 14-point spread? And that's going to be, you know, what we talk about on Thursday, obviously. Yeah. But, like, the fact that we're even – the fact that you and I are even having that conversation right. Last week, where we're both like, oh, yeah, take the Cowboys and the points. Like,
I took two bets on the Cowboys. I had them to cover, and then I had it – I took them at minus 16.5 to get nice plus 140. Freaking – I'm happy. But I went 1-for-7 on my between my underdog bets. I went 0-3 on my underdog shots for Sportsbook Wire in the prop bets. I went 2-for-8 because I put a wager on San Francisco on Thursday night, won that. But then the only bet on Sunday that hit, Sunday money that hit was the CeeDee Lamb over 23.5 for longest play. That was it. Yeah. The only one.
Yeah. And I'm still cooking with kickers, so
I should listen to you on set. With that, we will end this edition of the Rise Up Series podcast, Mr. of Cardinals Talk on the Web. We will have our 49ers preview show Thursday night with us. It'll hit Friday, and I will hopefully also have a 49ers guest. Hopefully I can get Niners wire Kyle Madsen, a friend of the show, on to talk about the game this coming up the weekend. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in a couple of days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.